boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to Bulls on Tap. I am your boy Buzz, and I'm joined by my dude Goose, aka Bulls Scripted. We are joined by a special guest today. Joe Colley of the Chicago Sun-Times has decided to come on the show with us, have a good Bulls talk, chill sesh, talking about everything Chicago Bulls. Before we get into this episode, be sure you're going to ontapsportsnet.com for all your Chicago sports literature and podcasting needs. Following us on Twitter at Bulls on Tap, at OnTap Sportsnet. Following Goose at Bull Scripted, me at Buzz on Tap. And if you don't already, which I'm sure if you listen to this show, you do, follow Joe Colley at J Colley Hoops. Joe, thank you
so much
for joining us, man.
All right, no problem. How are you guys doing?
Definitely hanging in there. It's a exciting night, even though the Bulls aren't on. As we talked about before we came on, we find out tonight if Zach LaVine will be an NBA All-Star for the first time in his seven-year career. So, very exciting. I'm looking forward to that, but Goose, what do you got going on, man?
I'm just excited to see that the snow is melting in my lawn instead of further accumulating in a bigger pile. That's my excitement for the day.
Oh, well, it seems like you had a pretty shitty day then. But
uneventful is not always a bad thing.
Well, that's very true. Joe, just get right into it, man. You know, you've been around the team for a long time. You've been with the Sun-Times since 2006, right?
2006, I was at the Daily Southtown back in 97. I moved from Cleveland in the end of 97 to cover the Cubs, of all teams, for I think I did 2 months. And then the T.J. Quinn left the Southtown to go to cover the Mets, and they asked me if I wanted to jump from the Cubs to the White Sox. And to me, that was a no-brainer.
Oh, man, you cover the – I know for a fact you covered the 2005 World Series team.
Yeah, it was the probably the most fun I've had in this profession. It was – I mean, just a – the things that went on away from the field were just spectacular movie script type stuff that unfortunately a lot of the public and a lot of the White Sox fans really will never get a taste of, because most of it is R-rated, especially in society right now. But it was a complete shit show circus from start to finish, and Ozzie Guillen was the perfect ringleader of it. It was great. I mean, it was outstanding. I was glad for the city. I mean, that's why I moved to Chicago from Cleveland. I mean, people think that I'm hard on these teams. I'm sorry, my bar is a championship. This isn't a pass-fail business. I mean, this is a pass-fail business. This isn't A, B, C's, and D's. And so to finally go to Chicago and cover something that was pure and that was a championship level, that's all you could ask for. And that's as a writer, that's what you want. And the frustration is when you see mediocrity over and over and over and over again, and a fan base accepting of it. That's the frustration I've had, especially the last couple of years. I don't know if it's because I'm getting old and you just kind of get old balls grumpy, or if I'm just kind of tired of the second biggest sports market, arguably, but still, in my eyes, the second biggest sports market acting small time across the board. And that's what's frustrated me as a writer the last probably 5 to 6 years, is the fan base becoming okay with it.
Right. I will say, before we get into this Bulls talk, we do have a Sox podcast, and I would hate to stretch you thin, but I would love to have you on that. We don't have to get into those.
Yeah, deep, I mean, I'm away from the team so much, but I would do
that's,
it. Hell,
that's
I'd jump
fantastic.
On it.
Well, yeah, I'm a huge Sox fan. I got the spring training hat on now. So being around the Bulls this year for you with Billy Donovan, who kind of shocked me. I don't know about you. It shocked me when he was hired. I didn't see that coming. And then, obviously with Paxton and Gar being – Paxton being moved to an advisor role, Gar being let go by the team, and Arturas Karnišovas and Mark Eversley coming in. Has the team been different to cover to you this year? Is it like night and day compared to what it was? Because obviously, as us being just fans, you are a guy who's in the mud. You're literally there. You're always there during it. That's your job, to be there to cover the team. Right. Is there a different feel this year compared to how it's been in the past? Because it seems like there was always a dark cloud over the team in the past, even when Rose.
Yeah, but I wouldn't call it a dark cloud. So here's the big difference. It's a shit cover this year because of the COVID circumstances.
Right.
So, Casey Johnson and I have talked about this a couple times. It's just, you're not getting the one-on-one interviews. You're not getting the guys pulling you over. I mean, people have to understand how a beat works with the beat writers. They know, the running joke within the team, especially the last couple of years, is – if they want something done more professionally, but you know, with dot the I's, cross the T's, the players are going to whisper stuff to Casey Johnson. If they need a Better Call Saul story, they go to the dumpster, and that's usually where I'm hanging out. And so, and that's just how it is. I mean, you're gonna leak how you want the story written to the writer you want writing it. And Vince Goodwill had his footprint, and so on and so on. We all have our kind of our guys and our people that, you know, give you stuff and say, hey, you can't put this on me. This is just for background for you to know. All that's gone with this COVID stuff. You know, when we're on the road, that's the most productive point. Time because there's no home cameras. There's very little media with the team. There's, you know, last year, hell, there were times it was just KC and I. There were a couple trips it was just me. You know, and then Jamal Collier came on from the Tribune and stuff like that. But they cut a couple of his trips too. So that's what sucks, because the fans get shit coverage. It is. It's just whoever they want to march out there for us, you know, we'll request people and they'll bring them out to us. They've been more than accommodating. But everyone is guarded on what they say and stuff like that. So that's different in that way. As far as what it feels like, it feels like a professional freaking NBA team for the first time since – even when Tibbs was there, it didn't feel professional because you knew this civil war that was going on, not only between front office and coaching staff, but the civil war that eventually grew amongst the players. You had the Powell and Jimmy camp against the Derek and the Joakim camp. And, you know, everyone talks about, well, what happened in that playoff, you know, Tibbs' last playoff run with that last game in Cleveland when it looked like Jimmy and Derek were both saying, no, you shoot it. You know, that was the head of the pimple right there. That was the end of it. That was what it turned into. So, you know, I mean, it feels like Billy Donovan, you know, look, the front office is a fresh of breath air. And then you bring in a coach that they didn't even know was going to be available. You know, I know the assistants, all the names are out there of the guys they were going after. I think we all had them and we're pretty consistent with them. You don't see Billy Donovan on the radar. And I know he's never won an NBA ring, but he's in that, not that five, six elite coaches, but he's right on that tier outside. And that's not something they've had since Tibbs. And he's a guy that obviously is coming into a whole different makeup of the front office. So from that standpoint, what they've built, the foundation, feels completely different. Now, you know, a lot of the players are the same and stuff, but they're playing – it's like watching real basketball. The last year's offense was a freaking joke. Take the mid-range away from them. It was so easy to defend. You know, if a guy breaks you down and starts going, he's not going to pull up because mid-range was taken away. So all you got to do is just go with him to the hoop because he's going to the rim. And backside helps, easy to come. I mean, it was a sophomore offense. So, it feels, as a writer, it definitely feels different. And it's what you guys are feeling and seeing. And the thing that's nice is the evolution. And what we're seeing from week one, week two, how we feel about a player that we saw in week three and what he is now. I mean, so it's all changing. And you know what? Coaching's a hell of a thing, isn't it? And I write it all the time about Jerry Reinsdorf never respecting that chair, whether it was the managerial chair or whether it's the basketball head coaching chair. He doesn't respect it like it should be respected and thinks he could just put in whoever he wants. And it doesn't work that way. There are guys that are difference makers, and Billy Donovan is a difference maker.
And obviously, I mean, I didn't know a lot of the stuff that you had said prior, you know, with the whole Tibbs era stuff. I knew there was always that civil war. I always, you know, leveled it down to Pax and him, and I knew Jimmy and Derek and Powell and Joe didn't see eye to eye. I knew all that stuff, but I was just surprised to hear it come to light by somebody that covers the team too a little bit. With the chair now being respected, I mean, does Arturas really have like that blessing to do what he obviously hired Billy Donovan? So that's a huge hire. But like you said, Jerry doesn't respect the chair. I always felt like Paxson, besides Thibodeau was the only one who I ever felt gave him hell. I don't know about Scott Skiles. I was a little.
Oh, no. Skiles gave him hell.
Okay. Well, yeah.
that was destined to do this too. I mean,
yeah, exactly. I mean, he choked out poor Vinny D. So it is what it is. But now that Arturas is there, I mean, like you said, it's a breath of fresh air. It feels like a professional organization. It feels like, you know, a real team. Do you think that, I mean, has Jerry just let go of the reins a little bit, bringing in somebody like him? Does he want the Bulls to succeed that much that he just made that choice to do that?
Well, here's how it works. And again, it's, you know, I think we've reported it. I think at the end of the day, and Michael hints at it, Michael Reinsdorf hints at it. The White Sox is Jerry's. That's Jerry's. He's got the final say no matter what.
Yeah, yeah.
And at the end of the day, the light trash that goes to the garbage can, he doesn't want to hear about that. If it's a two-year contract on a guy, he doesn't need to hear that. He trusts Rick Hahn. He trusts Ken Williams to go ahead and make those decisions. If it's a big ticket item, it's got to go on the desk of the chairman. The basketball side of it works similar, but here's the difference. He's empowered Michael. Thank goodness. He's empowered Michael. Like, say the Arturas thing. Here's what the old man told him. Paxton came to those guys. I remember that. It was that Sunday of the All-Star game. I broke the story. KC had it probably about an hour later, and then Woj had it probably an hour after that. And that the All-Star thing was Michael was recruiting people. And so that's how it got out. Someone told me Michael approached him and said, hey, Pax is stepping down, the whole front office. You know, we want to bring you here. So, or you're one of the guys we want to talk to. So they were definitely doing the research and homework All-Star week, and they had everybody in town. It was the perfect stage for that. So the way the Bulls work is the chairman will tell Michael, it's yours. Go pick a guy. And then Michael went and, to his credit, did his due diligence, found Arturas, interviewed Arturas, and then Arturas and Michael were in on the last interview with Jared. And then Jerry either gives his blessing, thumbs up, or thumbs down. I mean, he's still, at the end of the day, Michael even said, I still have to bring things like that to my dad's desk for a final thing. But Michael did all the running around and the work for it. And to Michael's credit, I think he's been able to talk his dad into, look, you trusted me to find the basketball guy. You signed off on this basketball guy. Let's let him be the basketball guy. Okay, and so Arturas, Mark Eversley, I don't think Jerry had any. Billy Donovan, I don't think this is that. That's not a coach Jerry would pick. Jerry likes these guys that aren't proven and aren't big-name guys. That's totally out of his wheelhouse. So you know that there's already either an Arturas or a Michael influence, which is good. But at the end of the day, when those max contracts come across the desk, the old man has to say, whoa, 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 because, I mean, those are big-ticket items. So I think Jerry – Arturas will say, this is why we need to do this, and give him all the information. But I think Jerry's going to is going to be the one that either says thumbs up or thumbs down. And so there is more. It's if you're a Bulls fan, you're probably a little more excited about how things are working compared to if you're a White Sox fan. But all major decisions still have the old man's got to look at every major decision at the end of the day.
Well, right. I guess that gives us the perfect segue. You've given it to us twice now here, hinting at the mediocrity and then now hinting at the max contract. And your biggest thing on Twitter with most people, obviously our little back and forth was on Thibs, and that was more just petty on my end.
Thibs is a good coach.
I just like to pick Dennis Flaws because he's not here anymore. And we have a good coach now, so I don't have to live in the past.
Right.
On the Zach LaVine front, I was somebody in the offseason who was more in the thinking of what you were, at least towards the beginning of the season. As you said, you're allowed to have a fluid opinion on this matter. What do you think the Bulls are going to do? If Arturas goes to Jerry and says, hey, this guy made an All-Star, his efficiency is proven, he's done, you know, 25-5-5 three consecutive years, did it 2 years with a bad coach. This year we've actually seen positive things come out of that kind of play. Is Jerry really going to say, no, we can't max this guy? 25 is the top dollar?
No, I mean, you know, look, here's the thing. The Zach at the beginning of the year that I said absolutely no max deal, and then plus I've been staring at that 21 class, and I know what that 21 class is about, that draft class. And so a couple things. First of all, you have to look at how Arturas and Mark Eversley, the programs they've been a part of, how those teams have been built. They've all been built through the draft. Now, that's not to say that they can't – now they're doing their own thing. They're the bosses now. But Denver's built through the draft. Eversley teams that he was a part of, his two teams, big draft-heavy teams. So you have to look at that and say, okay, these guys, this is the comfort level they were raised in. This is the breast that fed them is this draft. So that was the first part of it. And now all of a sudden you got a 21 draft and a 22 draft that's going to be loaded. So my whole bitch was, okay, I'm looking at when, now again, this is the beginning of the year. I'm looking at Wendell. Don't trust him. This is before I saw what he's doing. I'm looking at Lowry. Don't trust him. I look at Coby White. The day he was drafted, I said they gave him the wrong title of point guard. And I said, okay, so even if this core turns it around under Billy Donovan in 2 years and starts playing to what they think he is, and this is before I saw Patrick Williams and knew what he was about too, the timeline is so off of when you have to max up Zach and then hope that these schlubs rise up enough for another free agent to say, yeah, I want to go play with Zach, Wendell, and Lowry. Because you're
And then if they reach that level, you have to pay them too. And if they all reach the supposed level they're supposed to get to,
right,
you can't afford all them anyway.
So that was my original thing, is you got to trade Zach. Okay? Because first of all, then I was looking at the history of the NBA. There is not one two-guard, one-dimensional two-guard who is maxed out where it's worked out for that team. There just isn't. Now, there are guys that have transformed. James Harden turned into this you know, hybrid point guard that he is. But look what they brought him for help. They brought him Chris Paul. They brought him Westbrook. They've given him Hall of Fame guys around him, and he still can't get over the hump. So that is my big pause. And also, you just look at what's going on in the NBA. This is you better have a small forward or a power forward who is elite and a two-way player, and then you could put whoever you want around him. But it's got to start with that piece. So now all of a sudden, we fast forward a month, and I see what Patrick Williams is becoming. You know, I saw him at Florida State, but the college game, it might as well be a different sport. It's completely different.
I paid no mind to him entering the draft because I saw him as a big man. He played a big man position in college. I said, we drafted three of those. I don't want another one.
Right. And so I don't think anyone knew what was coming from him. And his first of all, you don't know his demeanor because you don't get a chance to see that at Florida State. You don't see the calm. You talk about, I'm not saying he's the next Kawhi, but the way he acts, I mean, he's not as weird as Kawhi. I've had to interview Kawhi before. He's just a weird dude. So he's normal. But his body build, his body, his makeup, his mental, I mean, it's just so Kawhi, it's kind of scary. So now all of a sudden I see what Zach's doing. And I still wasn't sold on it because I'm looking, I'm going, God, Zach, I mean, okay, you played D on that possession. And then this possession, what was that? Okay, and then you D'd up on two straight possessions, but you're letting go of the rope on this possession. And anybody could go through those games and pull six good clips, where I could have gone through and pulled six shit clips because that's what he was still doing. What we've seen the last 2 weeks now make, and again, this is fluid. I'm sorry, but I know people like to say, well, you tweeted 3 weeks ago this. You're wrong.
You can never change an opinion on something, Joe. If you have an opinion,
I know.
If you change it, you're the devil. So just know that.
And so 3 weeks ago, you know what? I was wrong, and God bless Zach. He is going out there now. The last 10 days, and I think Billy even kind of hinted, it's been and Zach, I asked Zach the other day, I was like, you know, you're talking about your defense. Why is this taking year seven? Is it Billy? Is it your teammates? Is it you? And he said, to be honest, he goes, it's all the above, but the main thing is I'm tired of losing. So it took him 7 years. Now, you know, don't count all the years. The ACL year, he's trying to get back. He's trying to find himself. You know, his first couple of years, he's a young pup. You know, I'm not going to hold him accountable all his years.
He got drafted behind Andrew Wiggins. Right, he was never a priority in his organization. Right. Until he got here, that was never the case.
Right. And, but for, you know, it's not like Billy Donovan's the first coach that told him the importance of defense.
Right.
So – why is it settling in now for him? And so, you know, I applaud his understanding of things. I wish it would have come sooner. It hasn't. But the last couple of weeks, he's making me say, okay, maybe if he makes this All-Star game, now you're in those rooms with those guys. And you guys, the recruiting that goes on at the All-Star game and especially on Olympic teams. Olympic teams.
That's how we got Kyrie and KD.
There you go. Well, that's how the original plan, if they didn't trade Jimmy was for sure Kyrie. Thinking he would either get Kyrie or Lowry. And so I broke that story and everyone thought I was an asshole and I was nuts. Then it's funny. He gets traded to Minnesota. Kyrie all of a sudden says, I want out of Cleveland. And he names Boston, the Lakers, and Minnesota. And I'm like, okay, I'm nuts. All of a sudden somebody wants to go to Minnesota now. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, Jimmy had a plan and he wanted to do it in Chicago. And
how did Wade, you were covering the team at this point. So how did Wade fall into that? Because I despised Wade. I despised the signing. I actually took off on Twitter because I told Wade that he was the highest paid player on the team and also the biggest detriment. And he took that jab personally and started telling me about all my lack of accomplishments in life. But how would Jimmy's plan have worked with the Wade situation? You send in Wade's inflated contract for Irving?
You probably would have had to keep Wade's contract one more year. You wouldn't have bought him out.
You would have had to eat it, and Kyrie would have to stay in
Cleveland. But the other thing is, Dwayne recruits really well, too.
Okay.
So, and Dwayne really took Jimmy underneath his wing, and Dwayne was willing to, I'll recruit guys, I'll do my 1 year next year, we'll see where it takes us, and then I step out of the screen, and Jimmy, this is your ball game then.
So and you're saying if Kyrie would have been pulled in, Wade would have turned down his player option and taken less money?
That I don't know.
That we don't know?
That's
maybe a dynamic.
I think Dwayne would have helped Jimmy as much as he can to build their version of the big two plus an old Dwayne.
Okay.
So, and the other one was the Lowry thing. But then, you know, the Toronto money that they threw at him was ridiculous. Lowry would have had to take less money. So that's what Jimmy wanted to do before he left to go to Europe and with Mark Wahlberg on the movie tour.
And because Jimmy was on Fallon about a week or two before he got traded. Said he loved Chicago, never wanted to leave.
And here's the other thing, too. I'm giving you guys some breaking news right here on your thing.
Look at that.
So look, Jimmy and I have a really good relationship. The thing that irked him more than anything, okay, fine. If it wasn't going to be the Max, fine. The Jordan Jumpman, the shoe was coming if he stayed in Chicago. And it meant the world to him to have his own title shoe under the Jumpman brand. And if you notice, he went to Minnesota and he was still wearing Jumpman that wasn't his brand because they're like, dude, Jumpman isn't going to give your own shoe in Minnesota. And then when he went to Philadelphia, it continued where they strung him along. And finally, if you notice, he dropped them.
He dropped them.
Yeah. He left them because he was going to get that shoe deal, and the Bulls kind of knew that too, that was part of it. So yeah, I think
– But if you knew that, why don't you leverage that for the veteran max instead of the supermax? You're going to get all this endorsement money.
Jimmy never said, I want the supermax or nothing.
Okay.
That was never said. So I think Jimmy was willing to say, look, this is part of the cushion I'll get. I want to stay in Chicago. It's important to me. And plus, Jimmy wasn't afraid of that statue in the atrium. There was one time I almost had Jimmy talked and when all the shit blew up about, I know Michael Carter Williams grabbed the number one, and that was a big shitstorm. And then someone else did or wanted to. And I can't remember who it was. It was a minor player that thought he was going to take number one, and everyone went crazy. And I remember I was at Jimmy's locker. I'm like, dude, you know what you should do? Change your number to the number one. That's what you should do. He's like, I should, shouldn't I? He was like, because Jimmy loves stirring it up. And he's like, I should change it to the number one. I go, are you married to that number that you have right now? He goes, I don't care about numbers. And so that would have been my greatest accomplishment in the business if I could talk Jimmy into taking the number one.
See, I love me some D Rose. I
get it.
Yeah, but I don't get upset about numbers.
Here's the thing too. You're like Casey Johnson and I. There aren't many stuff that he and I disagree with. The one disagreement we have is Derrick Rose. And I'll admit, him, Sam Smith, guys that were covering the team when Derrick first came there and his first couple years, his MVP year. You know, I was a columnist for a couple of those years. So I was in and out of there, but I was in a daily beat writer. I did a column for 2 years. They knew a different Derek than what I knew. And they admitted that. So when I got there, my first year was Derek's gone the whole year.
Okay.
He had blown the knee up. So my relationship with Derek was completely different, you know, because they even said Derek changed after the injury. So the Derek experience I got was different. I had a report on the Derek experience that I was getting. And unfortunately, it wasn't the experience that they were getting. They kept trying to tell me, no, man, this kid's sensitive and he cares about what you write. I'm like, hey, nobody, Derek Rose doesn't give a shit about what I write. Come on. I mean, he's worth, you know, by the time the Adidas deal is done, he's worth $500 million. Well, what should he care about what someone from the Sun-Times writer? And, you know, I don't deem my profession as important as some of these guys in this profession do. I think we're all replaceable. We're not curing cancer. There's some guys in the city that think they're doctors and are saving lives. They're not. Okay. This is a very replaceable job. And so I don't sit there and think, oh, I write this and this guy feels this way. If a guy is sensitive to something I wrote, then that tells me,
he's
probably
in the wrong league.
You're in the wrong league. And you should, I mean, I knew Swisher was done in Chicago when, and he and I had a great relationship. I don't know if you guys ever saw, we did, I took a chair shot from a wrestler and Swisher was the commentator and stuff. I'll throw it up on Twitter again sometime.
Yeah, you definitely need to do that. I need to see it.
And so, and Swish ad-libbed it and stuff. It was great. And so it was called Joe Meet Chair. I got hit by a chair by Dale Torborg, and it was, you know, it was a good video. My back's still messed up, but it was a good video. But so Swish and I started off in a great spot. But by the middle of the year, you know, he came from a place, Ohio State, he was treated like a god. Oakland, they treated him like a god. He was never criticized for anything. He's failing, and so we're starting to criticize him. And I remember he came up to me one time and goes, hey, man, hey, bro. He lifts up his hat, and he shows me the inside of his hat. He had my column where I ripped him inside of his hat. He goes, just so you know. And I think I turned to Scott Merck and I go, he's freaking done, dude. If he's putting articles in his hat, he's done. And so
wasn't too long after that he's gone, huh?
And it wasn't, well, they ended up keeping the whole year, but yeah, it was, he was right. Benched then, Ozzie benched him, and it was a shit show.
So obviously, you have the reputation amongst fans as kind of being this instigator, this contrarian, and I'm sure players and coaches and everybody that you interview has at least an idea of this stigma, but I mentioned it in the offseason on Twitter. I don't know if you've seen it. I do feel that the players, maybe not so much the coaches or the management that feels like you're trying to pry something out of them, but the players, I do feel all respond to you in a different, more friendly manner than most of the other beat writers. Even if they know you're about to groan with something hard, they seem to be more open and friendly with you in their response. Is that accurate, would you say?
I think it depends on the player. I mean, Derek would never – the last couple of years with Derek, he wouldn't even look me in the eyes. He'd answer my question, which I respected. Okay. But so at the same time, I think some players have also seen how I've treated some of the other players.
I guess Zach is who I'm referencing more because I feel like you've grilled Zach pretty hard about the trade thing. You know, first, even in the off season before the season started, you were asking him about trades and you've, you know, kind of stayed on at least the track of potentially the Bulls keeping that as an option.
Right.
But what your interactions with him, and Zach's an extremely humble guy, but he seems to have a level of respect for you that despite that you grill him that way, he appreciates it and he respects you. Do you feel that's a mutual thing between you and him?
Yeah, well, I think I've said Zach is the type of person you want to marry your sister, your daughter, however old you are. He is first class, one of the easiest guys to cover. As easy as he scores is as easy as he is to cover. You know, he and I have a video game thing that, you know, we play some mutual video games. I did a big thing on him when he went to Bungie Studio for Destiny 2 and was playing with some of the better guys in the world. And I sat in on the thing and talked to him and stuff like that. So, and there's some video games that we have in common. So we have some things in common, but I also think there's a, you know, like the Jabari Parker thing. So Jabari comes. I thought it was an awful signing. I thought they were just trying to.
We got killed for that.
Yeah. So then I was like, okay, it's an awful signing. And then the first press conference in the preseason, he does the one word answers, and I'm like, okay, I'll give him the first pass. Because look, I'm not trying to waste your time. I try asking thought out questions, not just your basic what went wrong in the game. You know, the TV, the Jim Rose questions. So I try to ask questions that make them think or give us a little bit more than they would. And trust me, you have to ask so many questions. They're not all winners. I've asked some dumb questions where I've just gone, that was a really stupid ass question.
I just wasted my turn.
Yes, exactly. Yes. I will put my hand down now. No. And so I gave Jabari the one-time pass. And then I don't know if someone filled him in that, you know, I had this thing with Derek. I don't know. And then it was the first game of the first or second game of the season. He bolts, doesn't even wait for the media. And I'm like, all right, this dude better really turn this around. And then the third time we went up to him, it was still like the third game of the season. He had an okay game, went to talk to him. And the TV person said, you know, what do you think you guys needed to do? Or what'd you need to score more? And he started that again. And like the third question, I looked at him. I go, you know what? I'm done, bro. I don't need you anymore. And I walked away. And I didn't talk to him the rest of the year until he left midway through the year. And the PR staff even said to me, what happened with you and Jabari? And I'm like, tell Jabari I'm done. And I did the same thing to Boozer. You know, everyone would chase Boozer's car at the end of the year. And then he'd stop the car like he's going to talk and then take off. I stayed inside the facility when he did that. I don't need to talk. I went 2.5 years without talking to the general manager when I covered the White Sox. Kenny Williams and I, our Cold War, you had threats of lawsuits. You had, I mean, you name it. And I told Kenny, he bumped me one time at Wrigley Field. And I was like, are you serious? You're going to come here? That's why you came here to do something bitchy like that and throw an elbow at me? And then I told him, I go, Kenny, you know I don't need to talk to you. I don't care if I ever talk to you again. I will still write about the team. And that's a credit to our newspaper, where the Sun-Times doesn't make you kiss these people's asses and put yourself in an uncomfortable position to get a meaningless story, because Jabari Parker was just meaningless quotes, a meaningless story. I had more fun writing about Jabari without no Jabari quotes in it. And so I think other players may see that or may know that reputation that, I mean, if you don't answer me, it's not like I'm not going to write about you. I'm still going to write about you with quotes or without quotes. There's not one person where you say, I need this guy. If this guy doesn't talk to me, I'm screwed. I just have never felt that way. So
I find it so funny that you say people chased after Carlos Boozer's car.
Oh, the last year.
I'm sorry.
I even warned him. I turned to Nick Friedel and I go, dude, don't go out there. And he goes, why? I go, Nick, don't go out there. I'm telling you. And all of a sudden he goes, you know, he has the Nick laugh. He goes out there and all the cameras are out there and Booze comes by in his car. He goes real fast by all the cameras. And this is at the old Berto Center. And all the cameras start chasing him and the people with the mics are chasing him. A couple of the beat writers are. And all, you know, he stopped and he rolled down the window and then he took off. And then Friedel goes, you were right. I go, what did I tell you? The dude's a douche. He's always been a douche. He's going to leave a douche. That's just who he is. So, I mean, you know, and then there's guys that had these awful reputations with the media that for some reason, you know, Albert Bell and I got along unbelievably well.
I got an Albert Bell poster right there with Frank Thomas, man, right behind this computer right now.
Yeah, I mean, the Albert stories, the Albert stories are fun in itself. But Albert, you know, AJ Pierzynski and I got along. I mean, you know, AJ did the whole video with me where I tried stealing bases off him after I kept mocking how bad he was at throwing base runners out. So, you know, there's been guys that have this bad reputation that I've hit it off with because I these guys know that I'm going to be honest. I'm going to be direct. I can be friendly with them, but I'm also not their best friend.
Right. Well, I think a great part to put in with this too is like you're talking about literal players here, and you know how the world of Twitter is.
Right.
And Twitter's a different beast, man. And like,
yeah,
you can let it either kill you, and you've seen it with athletes. I'm sure there's writers that feel the same way. I don't know if you know any personally that feel the same way where they're like, man, I can't even log on here.
It's funny you brought that up because I didn't realize the other day I said, you know, because I've never blocked anyone on Twitter. I just don't because
I've never blocked anybody either.
Yeah, because I don't, you know, it's just, to me, it's, and it's, if some of the stuff is mean-spirited, but I think it's funny, you know, I got a different sense of humor. Some of the stuff is like mean, and I think it's funny. I retweeted, I'm like, this is funny. This dude, hey, he brought a fastball around my head, and it's funny. Because I don't really, again, I don't take what I do as brain surgery. I'm not curing cancer. I'm not, you know what I mean? And so I didn't realize there was as many Chicago beat writers that block people, because people have been hitting me up in DMs and stuff and saying, dude, this guy blocks everybody, this guy. And when I see those people, I'm going to go, dude, why do you block everybody on Twitter, man? What's the big deal? But some guys are really sensitive, I guess.
I'm blocked by some people, but I've earned it most of the time. So
it's because you're relentless. You just don't stop. Like that.
I'm referring more to the Athletic Chicago. I pointed out that they give up all their information in their podcasts after they try to charge you for it. And after I pointed that out on one post, they just blocked me.
They blocked you.
It wasn't working so good, but that was just a dick.
Well, there's one person I know for sure that I'm blocked from on Twitter, and there's one.
It's a beat writer.
It's Nick Friedell.
Friedell?
Yeah, he blocked me on Twitter. But Joe, in my defense, this was years and years ago. Okay. My Twitter started in like 2012, and I was 20, I think, maybe 19 or 20.
Buzz had his first beer.
He drank his first beer and sent his first tweet out to Nick Friedell.
Right, and he would be on Waddle and Sylvie constantly. I mean, ESPN, you know, Waddle and Sylvie constantly, and he would rag on like Tibbs and like Lou and those guys about like, oh, this team isn't gonna beat the Heatles or whatever. And I was like, oh my god, I'm like, you know what? Yeah, they will. And I never said anything mean to him.
Right.
I was just kind of relentless about it. Like, I think that they could totally take them. And he's like, no. And then, you know, he quote tweeted me or whatever. It was cool. And you know, we talked back and forth, and I was like, man, I'm like, why are you even in Chicago if you hate Chicago? You know, and I didn't understand it at the time, man.
Right.
I'm a dude from Blue Island, Illinois, who didn't realize, like, you know, you got transferred from Syracuse or wherever the hell he lived before, you know.
He's an Orlando guy.
He's an Orlando guy. Yeah. I know he went to Syracuse. I think he went to Syracuse.
He went to Syracuse for college, yeah. But he's from Florida. He's Orlando.
Right. Yep. So it's like, you know, like, I didn't realize that at the time. And then, you know, he ended up blocking me, but it is what it is. But that is the only person that I know that is that has blocked.
And you're still blocked?
Yeah, I'm still blocked all these years. Oh. But it's okay, because like I told you, it was like in 2012, man.
I got
hired on the railroad like right after that, and I went dark on Twitter until like 2018.
I got you.
And that's when we started doing this kind of stuff. And
Gotcha.
Yeah, so
we've gone off the rails here on the mention of the railroad.
Hey, it's all good, man.
What do you think we're going to do with this trade deadline? We got all this Thad Young stuff back and forth. Do you think that's a good decision? Obviously, Thad puts you closer to mediocrity than the lottery. So I think I know your stance on it. Yeah, if you can get something for Thad, move him. But what are you hearing? Who's most likely to be moved?
I don't think they're going to get enough from Thad to warrant moving him and then take the winning taste that they're trying to put in these young guys' mouth. It's just not worth it. You're not going to get a big enough asset back. Now that can change. There could be an injury. Miami could up the ante. I mean, a guy like Thad would fit perfectly in Miami. A guy like Thad would fit perfectly in New York. So, I mean, there is, you know, Tibbs is going for it. I know that for a fact. Tibbs wants to break that New York curse and say, I did it in Minnesota and broke their drought. And look what I'm doing in New York, where you guys thought with Dolan as the owner, this team will never see the playoffs. So, if they could get their hands on so Thad is a commodity, but are you going to give enough where you're going to possibly jeopardize the team and the winning? Because I think Arturas and those guys deem Zach, Lowry, Wendell, Kobe playing in a meaningful game bigger than an asset that is either a very late first round or a second round pick. So I'll be surprised if Thad moves. Now, if the asset moves up or is more enticing, then all bets are off. But we're not there yet. I know for a fact they are not there yet. They're not getting those kind of calls where it's that kind of asset. So, is there a blockbuster for Zach? Possibly. But you just look at what's out there and you say, well, how would that work? What would that blockbuster be where you're going to get, you know, 9 cents for 10 cents or something close? And to me, it would have to be creative. It would have to be multi-team. And would have to bring the Bulls back a guy who can play now and an asset that you feel is a lottery pick at least, because this 21 draft class is lottery pick deep.
Oh,
you know, if you don't hit the top five, yeah, if you don't hit the top five, you're okay. 7, 9, 10, you're still okay. So, you know, so, and 22 is good too. I mean, if you could get, I don't know if it's going to be as good as 21, but again, we'll see. These kids can change minds in a year with maturity and stuff. So, I have a feeling it might be kind of status quo, or that maybe they look to add. Now, is there a wild card, a Lowry Markkanen, because they're playing some of their best basketball and Lowry is nowhere near the court while they're playing their best basketball the last 10 days? Does that kind of change their mind on guys? No, because here's the thing about Lowry. You can let – if it's a great asset, you move him. But the market's going to set a price on Lowry anyway. And the Bulls have been kind of lucky with that. I mean, if you think about Mirotić, they said, okay, market set a price on him. Nobody wanted him. And if you look at the market that was set on Zach by Sacramento, at the time it was a lot of money because you thought you were getting a guy off an ACL who's very one-dimensional. At that time, he was even more one-dimensional.
He only had 24 games that season to prove his worth.
Right. So you're saying – okay, they're overpaying for him. And now you look at that contract, and I asked him the other day, have you outplayed your contract? And he, you know, took the high road, which I knew Zach would, but I had to ask him anyway. So I think as of right now, if you're asking me today, I think it's going to be surprisingly quiet on the Bulls' end because I don't think that big asset is coming their way. As much as they would like one of those lottery picks, there's, you know, 29 other teams that also would like one of those lottery picks. So, again, an injury – a team getting desperate, a team getting nervous can always change. And the nice thing is they have another month. We're looking at another month still for a team to change its mind. So.
Yeah, I think I'm looking at Boston. If they don't turn it around in this next month, they got late first-round assets filling out the whole back end of their roster. So they can feel desperate over there.
Right, yeah. I mean, so, you know, we'll see. We'll see how it plays out. But if you're asking me right now, I think Arturas and Mark Eversley and Billy Donovan deem these young guys finally playing a meaningful big stage game, whether it's just one play-in game or winning a play-in game and playing a short series, anything to give them a taste and end this drought that Zach's had, Lowry's had. I mean, because look, the other thing about these guys, and I brought this up and people poo-poo it and go, oh, LeBron didn't win in college. He didn't even go to college. Blah, blah. That's fine. A lot of guys didn't win in college and have won in the NBA. But Billy even said it means something when you haven't played beyond the Sweet 16 in college in your career. You were a great high school athlete, like all these guys were, big deal.
And then you really trust the hell out of Archie.
There you go. And then there you go. And then you at the pro level, you haven't even sniffed a playoff. It means something. It grows on you. You become kind of like, well, hell, if I'm not going to be that guy that gets a ring, I got to get my money. And then you start worrying about your brand. You worry about yourself. It changes your whole attitude about the game. So it's hard to get a guy like that back in step and say, no, playing in a meaningful game and winning games, that's the important thing. And so I think that's a high-value item for them, is to make sure these guys play on a big stage in a meaningful game and give them that taste and then let them – go on from there. Then you could reassess what Zach is in 2022.
Yeah, I guess that makes a lot of sense. I mean, you know, from what I've seen, a lot of people, obviously, you have your trade Zach camp, you have your sign Zach camp, you have your trade Thad Young camp, you have your trade your keep Thad Young camp and everything like that. But player development doesn't necessarily mean coaches developing the players. It means circumstance as well. So like getting into the playoffs, being able to experience that for the first time, understanding not only what it's like to play in it, but what it's like to get there.
Well said. Yep.
And you know, as this season has kind of gone on for me, I thought that Zach would be an all-star to start the season. I really did. I was okay with trading Thad Young, is because the prior front office didn't give me a lot of hope, especially in the last years compared to what, you know, it's a new and a fresh front office now. So I'm looking at, like, whatever they do, I'm gonna accept it, and I'm going to support it as a fan of the team.
Unless they trade Zach, which I found out last night, then you're just going to bust a gasket.
Yeah, then I'll freak out. Yeah, I'll be a little pissed off. Yeah, I like Zach, man. I do. I like Zach. And he's been, like you said, the last 2 weeks of basketball you've watched him play, you're watching I've called him a star. I've always been weary of the superstar label for him, But the last 2 weeks that you've watched him, it's like a budding superstar. And he's 25. I mean, the world's not over when you're 25. You can still get better. And where they're at right now and the trajectory of the team this season, I don't know where they go after when they make the playoffs, because 2021 free agency ain't all that. I don't, you know, you have Pat, you have I mean, trades might be able to be made. I'm not sure, but I like to see where they're going. And again, within player development, it also means circumstances. So if you make those playoffs, man, it could be huge for them and confidence building for a lot of the young talent that's already there.
And here's the other thing too, that people have to understand. And the other reason that maxing Zach out right now scares me, this salary cap the next couple of years, guys, is going to do something the NBA has never seen it do, and it's going to go down. And they are financially preparing. There's some teams or some executives that told me they're preparing for the worst-case scenario. The China money is one thing, but another whole season without fans in the stands again, it's got to go down. And now the idea of the big three, there might be teams that you're only stuck getting big two. And so you really have to be selective of who those two are. And to me, here's the other point too. It's a lot easier to sell a big time free agent on the fact that he's coming to a place where there's a two-way player that busts his ass than it is trying to sell a one-dimensional player that there's already a two-way player there. You know what I'm saying? If there's a two-way player that's out there as a free agent and you're saying, hey, I'm going to give you X amount of money, and his mindset's going to be, but wait a second, I'm coming there and I got to basically – that dude's a one-dimensional dude and you gave him X amount of money. You know what I mean? So that's a tougher sell. That's why this evolution of Zach is so important. It's a much easier to sell to say, look, this is what Zach used to be. Billy's here. This is what Billy helped turn him into and what he continues to turn into. And then we got this thing named Patrick Williams. We don't know what that's going to turn into, but it could be something scary. That's a much easier sell. And so
do you think the threat of this cap coming down is why a team like the Nets just said, screw it, we're getting James Harden, we're getting
absolutely
while it's still possible?
Absolutely. Really? Okay, absolutely. Wow. Absolutely. Because then you're – well, that cap didn't involve what we did. You know what I mean? You're grandfathered in. Absolutely. I think that's why James Harden was such a big commodity on Clippers. I mean, all those teams we're talking about, they would have blown way past the luxury tax and not given a shit because they know it's going to go down and the game's going to change. And then there's a bunch of teams that are going, well, we want to compete, but we can only afford two stars. Well, you should have thought about that. Absolutely, that factored into guys still trying to build this big three before they feel like it's just going to become big two financially. So,
wow.
Good chat.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. So getting into it, you know, there's reports flying around everywhere right now. People are putting, you know, if you can see the comments on here, Shams came out with Zach was reported by Shams being in All-Star Reserve this year.
Yeah, my watch was going off. He's an All-Star.
Yeah,
he's an All-Star.
I do want to say that before we went live, damn it, I should have went live. Joe Colley had it first. Well, Joe, man, I really, you know, I appreciate you coming on the pod, man. You know, I know, like I said, you're a super busy guy, you know, covering every single game and, you know, having fun on Twitter with everybody. But I really appreciate you taking the time today to come on the podcast and just have fun, do a little live where people get to watch you, whether listen to you on the way home. This will be released in podcast form after as well. But I'd like to thank you. Do you have anything you want to tell anybody before you leave? You know, any listeners that aren't familiar?
No, hey, I know. I appreciate you guys having me on. I think it's important for people in our profession, when young guys like yourselves are busting your ass and trying to get something up and going and creative and get people thinking a different way, that you help out and that you help nourish what they're trying to do. That's important. I mean, obviously this is important to you guys. And so I think that's as an older guy in this profession, as you can see from the freaking gray hair,
that's what my dad says.
That ain't wisdom. That's stress, man. So, I mean, you know, hey, you guys keep doing what you're doing. And, you know, it's all this, the more voices that are out there, as long as it's not like, I don't like when people are just putting up attacks just to attack. If it's just well thought out stuff, I'm going to go and support it and help out as much as I can. So I appreciate you guys I like the way it break down. It was organic. It was natural as far as unscripted and I going at it. And then me saying, well, put me on your show because I saw it was a podcast. I'm like, yeah, I'll do a show. I don't give a shit. So it was good to see you guys working your ass off. I appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate you, man. We look forward to having you on in the future, too.
Hopefully we can do this again. Buzz is going to need you for the Sox. You sound like you got
more
fun stuff to unload on that team.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, all thank you so much, Joe. You have a great night, man. And I guess we could all celebrate that Zach LaVine is an NBA All-Star. Zach is an All-Star.
Yep.
Take care, my friend.
Take care, boys.
So we got to add Joe Colley in tonight on this podcast. And, dude, that was actually like – I think that – you know how we always do this, but I'm going to do it tonight. Like, that was like one of my favorite podcasts that we've ever done. Joe, that was organic as hell.
It's always nice to have different opinions. Me and you can agree a little bit too much, and obviously we have our strong disagreements too, but it is always nice to bring somebody in that isn't just speculating, using common sense, logic, you know, trying to connect dots that may or may not be there. He's actually there. So as much as, you know, we might give Joe crap and everybody else on Twitter might give Joe crap, I think we got to see a different side of a guy that you usually only get to hear his questions on one side of the camera, and then you get to see him, you know, responding to you on Twitter. And it seems more like Joe's kind of just – he's got a sick, twisted sense of humor. So
he's somebody I'd like to have a beer with, you know, down the road, one of these days, you know. Definitely somebody I'd like to have a beer with.
But Zach LaVine is a fucking all-star?
Yeah, I mean, like that's Jimmy the coolest Butler, part.
And one of the guys we got back actually became an all-star? That fucking happened?
I know, it blows my mind. And you know what the coolest part about it is like, God damn, I wish we were live when Joe told us he was an all-star, but we weren't. You know,
I saw his phone go off and I saw a comment.
But he had that spooky little ringtone go off.
Fans reported it. Joe kept a straight face there. He probably should have just let it up.
Oh my God, that is so cool. That you know, like I said, what a huge day for Bulls fans, for Zach LaVine. The Chicago Bulls, you know, the Bulls have an all-star, and it's a kid that has been here now for 3 years, 4 years, right? 3 years.
Three.
Yeah, 3 years, who's organically making himself, and like I said, I never like throwing around the superstar thing, but he's making himself a superstar, and it's really cool, too.
I told you were wrong when you said he was going to be an all-star, and that happened, so I'm not going to agree with you because I didn't agree with you last time, and it came true. So I'm not going to call Zach a superstar yet, but that's only with the intent of it coming true.
Yeah, you're trying that like
the reverse psychology. You know?
Yeah, I see what you're doing, brother. I dig it. You know, it's cool to see that as a fan, and you know, and especially having Joe on too. I want to point something out to people that listen to this is like, you know, I have changed opinions. You know, you've changed opinions when you watch something organically. You know. He was right, man. People could change opinions, you know, and that's fine and all dandy. Like, I did not expect him to come on this show and say that. He's like, God damn, dude, Zach, over the last 2 weeks is really making me reconsider what I thought before. It's fluid. You know, you could change an opinion.
Well, I don't think that his stance before was wrong either. I had the same fear in the offseason. I wanted massive change because I felt we were going to be in the middle, and hell, we might still be at the very back end of the lottery or here in the middle, but the growth we're seeing is worth it. And Zach LaVine making an all-star game, he's in that fucking room now. He's going to be in that locker room with that guy. He's sharing Gatorade with the 11 best players in the East on that bench.
And that's something that's so badass that Joe said too. This is something that we already knew, like as fans, but to have it confirmed by somebody that's like, you know, we've talked to KC on this podcast before. We've had Tony Gill, we've had Kevin Anderson, we've had these guys too, and I think we all are along the same thought process. We know what happens, but when Joe said like it is so important at NBA All-Star Weekend, like the conversations that happen there, like I would have had no clue that Michael Reinsdorf was talking to, you know, potential general managers.
Zach LaVine's sitting there up on the chair and fans are yelling FireGar packs and Michael's literally out just sending out feelers to teams, GMs trying to find somebody. No, that was definitely a very interesting conversation. I hope Joe will come on with us again. That was definitely a fun show. I'm actually kind of like dumbfounded how smooth and fun that went. You were building this up as a versus, and here Joe is just a big cuddly teddy bear.
Yeah, you. Well, I thought you guys might go at it about like the Tibbs thing, but he like laughed it off like he was just having a good time. Like he obviously he's a big Tibbs guy. He's a Tibbs fan. He's a Jimmy Butler fan, and he said he was close to Jimmy Butler. You know, but and you held your ground like, hey man, this is what it is. You know, like it was a cool dynamic of kind of showing you outside of typing shit on Twitter when people actually have organic conversation how fun and easy flowing the shit could be. Like I put away four beers during that and just like
four sips of water, you know?
Yeah, I felt like I was just at a game having a good time. So you know, definitely really hope that we can have him on in the future. Again, I know he's a busy guy, but him taking, you know, time out.
No, I mean,
today was
he
awesome.
Literally took time out of his day expecting to get this call about Zach LaVine becoming an all-star and having to get ready to go for a mini presser for that. So that's awesome. He fit us in and an off day that was also going to be pretty action-packed for him. So thank you again, Joe. Thank you for everybody that tuned into that. If you didn't get to listen to it live, it is going to be in podcast form as well. That one should do good on the Spotify, Twitcher, and all them other fun places.
What's Twitcher?
I have no idea.
Just wanted to ask because I'm like, are we not on something that I don't know
about?
We're
not on Twitcher, bro. We're not there. I don't know what Twitcher is.
I don't know what Twitcher is.
It's Twitch with an er.
Oh God, man, that's fucking fantastic. I love the looseness of it all. But yeah, everybody, thank you for joining us for the live portion. If you please, I mean, spread this around. If you were, it gives you a different insight on a guy that people look at as a villain, which is actually pretty cool because he was one of the nicest guys we've ever had on the fucking pod. So everybody be sure you're going to ontapsportsnet.com for all your Chicago sports literature and podcasting needs. Following us on Twitter at ontapsportsnet, at BullsOnTap, following Goose at BullsCrypted, following me at BuzzOnTap. And I'm sure if you're already listening to us, you follow Joe Colley, but if you don't, at JColleyHoops and at Suntime_sports is where you can find where he writes and his tweets and all that stuff. Anywhere you can listen to podcasts, you can listen to us. 5-star rating and review is cool.
It's
and tough.
It's not Twitcher.
It's not, yeah, it's not Twitcher. It is not Twitcher. We'll be back tomorrow night after the Chicago Bulls beat the Minnesota Timberwolves. And maybe Zach LaVine recruits Karl Anthony Towns. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But we'll talk about it tomorrow night when we watch our All-Star beat the shit out of his former team. Let's go Bulls.